Hello, everybody. This is Tyson Sugihara with Tyson Sugihara Photography and Thin Air Media, and I would like to welcome you to my inaugural podcast. It's the week before the holiday season, and you know, I'm really excited. I have my beautiful wife, Nicole, here with me today. We are doing a lot of amazing things this year, both for business and personal development. It's been a really great year, and we just wanted to take a couple of moments to, first of all, like I said, welcome you to my first podcast, and we're just going to do a little bit of back and forth. This isn't scripted, and so here we are.
Hi, my name is Nicole Sugihara, and as Tyson said, I am his lovely wife, and the name of this show is called The Studio Life, and Tyson is a professional photographer and videographer. He also does a lot of graphics design and builds websites. And I wanted to take a moment today to ask him some good questions about what makes him tick, really, and about what he loves about photography and what he doesn't love about photography or what an experience is like. So I'm going to ask him some good questions about what he does on a daily basis and why he does what he does. So, how does that sound?
That sounds great.
Okay.
Let's get going.
Okay, so the first question is, how long have you been a photographer?
How long have I been a photographer? I have been a photographer since I was 8 years old. That's when I picked up my first camera. There's a little story that goes behind that. It was, for any of you, I'm dating myself here, but back in the early 80s, Kodak had a camera that was called a disc, had disc film that looks like one of those 3D viewers, and that's even dating me as well, but you know, it's a disc, and it had very small film that came on a disc, and I really wanted one of those cameras. They were all the rage back then. At least, especially to an eight-year-old. One day, my mother surprised me with one of these cameras. I don't know if it was a birthday or a Christmas. It had to have been something like that. And I remember my first outing with that camera was to the Utah Zoo, the Hogel Zoo. And I was having a great time photographing everything. Of course, a kid at the zoo at 8 years old with a brand new camera. What more can you ask for? We were heading over to the giraffe enclosure, and there's a bridge that goes above the river. And I thought how cool it would be to take a picture of, you know, the flowing water under this bridge. And I stood up on the railing, I bent over to take the photo, and right as I either took the photo or was about to take the photo, I thought my hand was through the lanyard of the camera, and you can guess what happens next. I watched that new camera tumble end over end to the bottom, 30 feet down into this river, never to be seen again. And that was my first camera that I ever owned for however short of a time. If you're wondering how long I've been a photographer professionally, that dates back to 2004.
Okay, excellent. So after you were 8 and you had your disc camera and then lost your disc camera, what was your next camera? Do you remember?
My next camera, you know, that was the first new camera and the last new camera I had for quite a while. After that, it went to a lot of the instant film cameras, namely Polaroids. My grandparents had old Polaroid cameras that they let me use, and back then Polaroid pack film was very inexpensive, and we had it everywhere, and that was great because for a child it's nice to have that instant gratification without having to wait for the film to be processed and come back. And I used Polaroid cameras a lot back to the old they had actual flash bricks. I don't recall right now what they were called, but you had either one that for every exposure the flash would turn, and you only had four.
Those.
They had a little filament in there, and it would actually it would fire, and when it combusted, that was your flash. And you either had a flash bar that had six or eight flashes to it, or they had some that were little cubes that had four flashes to them, and you would turn them each time you took a photo. That was my, I remember using that those cameras for quite a while. It then manifested into more film photography, where I was using 35 millimeter cameras for quite a while, eventually creating my own darkroom in the basement and shooting black and white photography and teaching myself how to develop film in my basement. And I did that for quite a while, and until the it would have been the early 90s was my very first digital camera that I had, and it was less than 1 megapixel. It was less than a megapixel. In fact, I think the card, I remember a 256 megabyte card being very expensive for that little digital camera, and it would hold about 16 photos on it, and they were horrible, but it was digital, and it was brand new technology and very expensive then. I didn't hold on to the digital idea very well. I thought it was going to be a fad like many other photographers of that time. I ended up trading that camera for another film body camera, and stayed with film for quite a while until probably the early 2000s. I was still shooting film.
Cool. And he still actually does a good portion of old school film development and shooting now. One of the things that he absolutely loves to do now, he has embraced the digital age very well. However, one of the things that he does love to play with and do is still develop some of the old film. And I have a medium format Mamiya. My undergrad degree was in photography as well, and so he gets to use all of what was retired, some of my old retired equipment. He now gets to use that now, and he makes beautiful images with that. So that's been really fun to see that transition and give him another way to play with photography and old school, quote unquote, formats. So,
right, I do use that quite a bit, and then I also have gone into a large format camera, a 4x5 camera that is about 4x5 inch film that uses a view camera. So those are the kind that have the big bellows that you could see in the olden days, where you put the dark cloth over your head and you're looking through basically the back of the camera is a piece of glass, and that is what's projecting the image that you're seeing from the lens onto that glass. And it's upside down because it doesn't have any of the components in there to flip the image around, the mirrors like we have in current technology. So that's really fun, and also I love using still the instant film. Unfortunately, now the Polaroid Land cameras, they're still out there, and over the last couple of years has become a pretty good it's become pretty trendy to take those old cameras and convert them so that you can now use AAA or AA batteries instead of the old batteries that were in them, and repurpose them with the pack film. Unfortunately, the black and white was just discontinued. Fuji was making it up until about a year ago. It was discontinued. I still have a few of those left. They're now expired, but I'm sure they'll still be good. And expired film, people buying expired film and experimenting with that has become another artistic venture. It's neat to be able to go back to film photography and know that you have to look at things a little bit differently. It's in today's world, it's become such a habit with phones or DSLR cameras or point and shoot digital cameras to take, you'll see these, going from kids taking selfies, and they'll shoot, you can see kids taking, they'll take 100 photos, selfie photos, and then go through them and pick the one that they like. And the same applies to other digital photography, even to a lot of the professionals now. You can put such large file memory cards in and just take so many photographs without having to really consider exposure and composition and worry about a lot of those things. They'll take a photo and look at it and then adjust it after the fact. Shooting with film and having to use a light meter and really dissect a scene before, I think, gives photographers that are still doing that the upper hand when it comes to then going over to digital work, which I do a lot of digital photography. That's most of what I do. However, I don't want to lose the art form that is film photography and the roots where what I do now, where it came from.
Yeah, which is totally awesome. And it is definitely an art form. And I think that, I agree that it's become so instantaneous that I think a lot of people don't even remember the roots, or they don't know the roots of where photography really did come from and how long it used to actually take to be able to create one shot and what that even looked like. And so, we were taught that, you had to pre-compose your shot prior to ever snapping, the button when you were doing film photography, just because, you wouldn't want to waste all that film. And then the problem of trying to do post-production processing was not as easy as putting that into a computer and just adjusting whatever you wanted to. You have to like dodge and burn old school style with a piece of cardboard. And that stuff became really time consuming and very expensive. And so you learned a lot. And I think that is an important thing to remember. And I think it's one of the things that makes Tyson a really great photographer, is keeping in mind those roots. So why did you become a photographer?
Why did I become a photographer? I don't know if it's the Asian in me.
He's half Japanese.
Because, I'm pretty stereotypical, and my friends make fun of me about that. So that's a possible cause.
We're getting this genetic test done to make sure that's really official.
I don't know from a young age what sparked that. There wasn't really any mentor that I had. There wasn't anybody that I was looking up to. So that, I don't know exactly where that came from. I've always loved books and going through books and looking at beautiful images and trying to dissect that. And that may have been something that sparked it. Going into my teenage years, my aunt and uncle owned a local photography shop, and I did spend a little bit more time around them. And, actually, I retract. Going back to a young age, I did have family members that had little studios set up in their, like in their basement. But I don't recall really spending any time trying to learn any of that. So there was a little bit of influence there that maybe was just enough to stick, that doesn't create a solid memory or foundation for that passion. So that's a difficult question for me to answer. Sorry.
Okay. So why then? Okay, you could have chosen to be a bajillion different things.
Right, and I have tried to do a bajillion different things at some point or another. It hasn't been just I knew I was going to be a photographer from forever. I've done many other things. However, what I have been able to do with almost every type of work that I have ever done is incorporate some type of visual art into it, whether it be photography or video or some type of graphic work.
So I think it's something that he, was definitely influenced. I mean, going back to your grandma and grandpa having their shop, right, back in the day.
Aunt and uncle.
And then, oh, not your grandma. No. Oh, I thought they did it originally. Okay, and then, okay, so your aunt and uncle. So going back, I think that was one of those things where it just sort of has always been a pretty consistent process that's always been or an influence that's always been running through his life. And he does have another uncle that's a professional videographer as well. So I think there's a lot of it in the family. Okay, so what is your favorite type of photography or your favorite subject to photograph?
I wouldn't say that I have a favorite, and I'm not one of those guys that's known for being that guy. I've always loved being outdoors and nature, and I really love going out in, especially with this large format film camera. There is a sense of accomplishment when you're packing around this huge cumbersome box with a camera and different filters and film packs, and hiking into the backcountry to capture a shot. And sometimes it works and sometimes it doesn't. That's definitely great work. I love working with people. I'm not the number one go-to guy for family or children's photography. However, I have done some of that in the past. I do like working in the studio. That's something that has come along more in the last, I would say, 4 or 5 years, where I've started doing a lot more studio work, and now, of course, owning and operating my own studio here and getting into commercial work. I really like the commercial aspect of photography, trying to manipulate lights in a controlled area on subjects that are difficult to light, namely, different product photography like I do for your company. There's a lot of challenges that are presented there. And of course, it's always nice when we have beautiful women in the studio.
He does like to photograph scantily clad women as well. That's just, and he does that very well. So it's good. It's very good. But who doesn't love beautiful women and men? I mean, one of my favorite subjects to shoot, when I was in my undergrad, really was nudes. I loved photographing nudes, and I didn't really care if it was male or female. I generally got more females for posing, but I would, one of my favorite things to do is nudes in nature. Like, that was just what I totally enjoyed.
And so, just disclosure, I don't do the nude photography. That's not something that doesn't. I do much of. I have done that before, but that's not, it'd be more of a fashion or editorial type of work that I typically find myself doing in that genre.
Yeah, scantily clad, not
some
nude.
Some boudoir.
We leave that to me. Okay. Do you have one photographic moment that really stands out as being a favorite experience that you've had?
One photographic moment that stands out as being a favorite experience.
I felt like you had a really impactful moment.
There's one image that really comes to mind that is probably one that I have that's near and dear to me, and that is one that's actually in our house that was taken in the Narrows in Zion Canyon National Park, or Zion National Park in the Narrows Canyon. The Narrows, it's actually on National Geographic's top 10 list of adventures to do in the world. I believe it on their list, it's even in the top 5. And you have to get the shot that I got there, it requires 2 days of hiking down a slot canyon. You can only go down, you can't go up because there are some obstacles that prevent you from doing that, or if you did, it would be extremely difficult. And that's probably one of my all-time favorite images, just the what it took to get in there and do that work. And it's a very narrow canyon. The walls are over 1,000 feet high. They go straight up. If you're claustrophobic, it's not the place to be, because it's you're in there for 2 days. It's the middle of summer. When you're out of the canyon, it can be 105 degrees outside. It never gets over maybe 65 degrees down in that mm-hmm. in those Narrows. So that's probably one of my most favorite images. But we haven't talked about other areas of photography that I've been involved in. I have a lot of dear memories there as well. So
one of the things that he also did, as he was saying earlier, that he does, you know, whatever he's done, it generally has incorporated some form of the visual arts, generally photography or video. And he's a professional skydiver as well. And one of the things that he started doing when he became a skydiver was being the photographer or the videographer that would go out with the tandem jumpers and record, you know, for some of these people, some of their life-altering, you know, bucket list moments, a lot of one-time, either people that were chronically ill, that this was sort of, you know, one of their last hurrahs before they were going to be passing on. Sometimes, you know, the 80-year-old having their birthday party, or, you know, just different kinds of moments. And I know you have a couple of those experiences that have really that you've absolutely loved. Do you want to talk about any of those experiences? I think those are really powerful.
Well, like you said, being in the action sports world, and I was doing some photographing big mountain skiers, backcountry skiers, snowmobiling, and then as a skydiver, both as just somebody that was doing it as a hobby, and then eventually going professional and becoming a professional aerial photographer and videographer. That gave me the opportunity to definitely interact with people from all walks of life. It could have been kids that had just turned 18 that were coming out to do this, to, like Nicole mentioned, people that literally had been given weeks to live. And I was the one that was capturing some of their final wishes in their last adventure, which strikes me, you know, a lot of times when I reflect and tell these stories, both on, you know, people starting their life as an adult and people whose life is ending due to age or illness, that, you know, has struck me. And seeing these people, you know, or hearing that they had passed on just a week after they came, and I was able to, you know, document some of the, you know, their final happiest moments. So that's definitely been humbling and something that I'm grateful that I was the guy that was able to do that and pass those memories on to their family members, and something that they could all take with them. And of course, the other side is, you know, it's skydiving, you're getting paid to do it all day. Who wouldn't want to do that? And, you know, we have a lot of, you know, you get a lot of big name people that come through that like to do that. And it's given me the opportunity to meet a lot of celebrities and, you know, big names that are in the world. And we all come together, and that's definitely been really cool. And a lot of that wouldn't be possible if I weren't doing what I do now.
Yeah. So I think those are some of my favorite stories that he tells that I know have been really impactful and amazing for him. So excellent. Okay. What do you love the very most about photography and being a photographer?
What I love the most is that I'm able to, this is what I love the most, and also some of the scariest things, is that being an entrepreneur, I'm able to create my own destiny with this art form. And if it's successful or unsuccessful, that's all on me. I'm not relying on an employer to pay me an hourly wage. It all comes from within my brain and what I'm able to put together and showcase and hopefully display out there, things that people like enough that they want to come and work with me themselves. And the freedom to be able to make my own hours. If I need to go do something on, you know, for take my personal time away from my business, I'm able to do that. I'm not a millionaire.
Yet.
Sometimes I wonder why I'm doing it. You know, it may feel at times that it's easier to go work for somebody else, but honestly, I don't know that I could go back into the blue collar world at this point, because it's really nice to be able to set your own rules and have no boundaries. And really, it's as big as you can dream. Those possibilities are out there. And I made a little quote saying that, now I can't remember it. Something to the effect of, what I like is that photography is like a time machine for me, mm-hmm. where it allows us to view. Photography is like a time machine. We'll have to get back to you on that one.
We'll put a post on it. We'll put it in the show notes.
It's a good quote.
It is a good quote. But you love it because, I mean...
I love it for the simple fact that you're able to capture memories and have... It's really nice to have somebody say, wow, how did you do that? That's so amazing. And or even if you're shooting somebody, to take what I've learned over several years and make it look easy. And there's plenty of people out there that, especially now, they feel that because you can go out to Best Buy and buy a pretty darn nice camera. I mean, the cameras you can buy in a box store now are nicer than cameras that the professionals were using just a few years ago. So right. The technology is there. It's available for everybody. However, there is still technique and things that you need to know rather than just putting the camera on go and pushing a button. So.
And I think the freedom, ultimately Tyson loves, as an entrepreneur and also as a photographer, one of the things that he, and in life in general, one of the things that he needs and flourishes with really is freedom and, being able to sort of make his own way. And I think that that's, he's like that with pretty much everything that he does. And so it's a really good fit that way as well. Okay, so I have two more questions. What would you like your mark to be on the photographic world?
What would I like my mark to be on the photographic world? I really want to be known as the best photographer that wherever I get, eventually photographers either they go into or they get classified in some type of a category or niche, right? And I want to not only dream big, but play big and be big. And that's not trying to be an ego-driven thing. But, again, going into the work that we've been doing this year, if we're not going to strive to be the best at whatever we're doing, then why are we doing, at that point it becomes a hobby, not your life's work. And this is molding myself into my life's work. And I want to be the best at what I do.
Awesome.
So to be remembered as the best at this and my craft is my goal.
Who have been some of your mentors or people that you have learned from? Because one of the things that people don't maybe know about you, because they just are being introduced to you right this minute, is that Tyson's training has been largely self-taught.
Right. And not largely. It's pretty much, I'm not educated through any university or, college. I don't have a degree in what I do. And that's, again, another thing that it's definitely nice to have that type of a credential. However, I have worked with a lot of interns and kids that come out that of school that have different degrees in the graphic arts, visual arts, photography, videography, and what you find in a classroom versus what it's like in the real world, I assume are two totally different things, because most of these kids don't have that real world experience in the workflow and the techniques and processes those aren't taught. It's like, you know, sending an astronaut into a pool versus outer space. That's, you know, about as good as they can do, but until they get into outer space, you don't know what it's like. And I think that these kids that until you are out there working for several years and building your craft in your own style and look, that that's what it takes. I found that quote here. Let me say it really quick. Hopefully you guys will agree. I think this is one that came to me in the middle of the night. But photography is my time machine, a glimpse of the past, a vision of the future. That's my quote.
That's a very lovely one. I like that. And I think that's, well, and it captures the now perfectly because it's only one instance.
Yes.
Which is cool too. So you get all of it all wrapped up in one shot or one experience. Okay. So yeah, what I wanted to say about that too is that's not a cut at all as far as, oh, so the question was, who are some of your favorite mentors?
Oh, yes. Sorry. I don't know why I went.
Well, because I stated.
Down that rabbit hole there. And that is, I'm not, now again, I'm not saying that you shouldn't seek higher education in a professional, you know, realm. So before anybody starts bashing me about that, I wasn't trying to say that you shouldn't do that. Get your education. However, I found that, you know, just for full disclosure, that I liked the way that I did my stuff. So,
some of your favorite. Well, and so really quick though, at the time that a lot of other kids, I'll still call them kids because they're still teens, late teens, would be maybe going to college. He had other life things going on, and so it really wasn't necessarily
option
either.
Right, but the technology is changing so rapidly now that the curriculum can't keep up with technology,
that's
really where it's at with. Especially interns, they are two or three versions back on software and technology, and it's just things that, unless you're working on that every single day, it's hard to keep. It's hard for me to keep up, especially now with you know, Adobe, where they have the Creative Cloud, and these updates happen. It could be monthly. It could be as often as they want to release a new feature. Whereas before, I would at least have to wait a year for the new discs to come out,
and the debut.
And I knew what was, you know, they would have previews and teasers coming out about all of these new things that were going to be available. Now you're getting them, and you don't even know that you've got them. You just see that you have an update, and you download it. So
tell people really. So okay, so if there's somebody who like you, maybe, or...
do you want me to answer the question that you
asked?
Yeah,
but it's going to be a couple questions. So it's your favorite mentors and then how you ended up training. You know, so if somebody doesn't want to go to the university or can't go to the university for whatever reason, then how did you actually train and who did you train with? Or all that, just who were your favorites?
So some of my favorites... let's see, you're putting me on the spot here. I have... you know, I really like Joe McNally's work. I've had an opportunity to work with Joe at in Florida a couple of years ago, and he's a very nice, approachable person, and he has a phenomenal body of work. Again, working with, if you look at Joe McNally's work, McNally, he's done it all. He's created some really cool projects, the firemen in New York City, using the world's largest Polaroid camera, and each piece of film is, I think, 8 feet tall. They're human sized, and he's using the exposure time was really long. I don't remember the exact time, but it was a long time to make somebody stand perfectly still. And there's been an exhibit in New York. They're in the archives out there, and that's from that to just everything that he's embodied. He doesn't do things the easiest way. He does things very creatively. He's known as a guy that uses speed lights instead of great big strobes. So he'll, you know, where you could maybe light something with 4 or 5 big strobes, he'll do it with 20 speed lights. And that's he shoots a lot with speed lights, and that's really cool. So Joe McNally, Jeremy Cowart is another one that comes to mind. He's a celebrity photographer. What I really like about Jeremy and what he's done is the process of giving back through. You and I were both part of the Help Portrait project. We were there in the early years, and that's where basically a group of professional photographers every year get together and take photos. We do it all day long for those that are less fortunate. We do it for local homeless shelters and rescue missions and women's shelters and families that are on like what's it called? Article 8? No. Section 8 housing. Low-income families. And to give people, some of these people, a print. That's the whole thing, is we give them a print. And more often than you would realize, because we take this for granted, being we're fortunate that some of these people have not had their photo taken in literally decades. And some of these kids had never had that, right? And they go through, they have the opportunity to have hair and makeup and, have professional photography sitting, and then have an actual print delivered to them. And we have seen some people that have come back the next year and that are there's a lot of good, positive things that come out of that project. And also Jeremy has done, other projects for disaster relief. And he did the... a Haiti project, and I can't remember if it was the Hands of Haiti. I'm sorry, I don't remember, Jeremy, if you ever hear this. But Jeremy Cowart, Cowart, again, he's done so much for the celebrities and also for those that are in need.
It is amazing work.
Amazing work.
He always at so one of the places that you have done a good amount of training is at Photoshop World, and we've met, well, Tyson's met, I didn't actually meet Jeremy, but I did see one of his slideshows that he presented on that Haiti work that he did, and it was, there's not a dry eye in the audience when he gets done. It's just such a beautiful and amazing group of work, and he does it all over. I mean, he does all kinds of different stuff, so he's amazing and just...
Yeah, and I don't like to be put on the spot with favorite photographer, because there are so many. There are so many that I
can. How about through Creative Life?
It's Sue Creative. Well, Creative Live, right? So Sue Bry, she's the queen of Creative Live, and she's the queen of women's portraiture right now. Honestly, she is the go-to name that you hear and you see her name everywhere. She came out of New Zealand. Opened up an office, I believe, in Australia, and if, correct me if I'm wrong, but now she's based out of Los Angeles, and she's really built her brand and her business and her name, over, I believe she says, decades of not studying light. Like, she's kind of gone a different route where she hasn't studied light like photographers do, right? We couldn't have photography without light. She has studied the human form and posing. Mm-hmm. She's mastered the pose, and the photography kind of came, I don't want to say secondary, but based off of what I've read of Sue, and I was in a workshop with her also, and spent a couple of days with Sue, and amazing.
I mean, and then one other, the younger gal, and I can't remember her name, Brooke.
Oh, Brooke Shaden.
Yeah.
Another one. She's also become very popular with. She's a compositor, so she's taking a lot of photos to make one really cool photo that's dreamlike and kind of dark and very cool. I mean, we could go on and on about that. So.
But it was just kind of, I like to know where people get their, some of their inspiration, their drive, and their mentoring. And also just to give gratitude and thanks back to the people that have made, a huge influence on your life and what they teach. And I think one of the things to know about all of those people that Tyson just mentioned is that they all are incredibly generous in how they work and how they choose to teach. And they're so generous with all of their knowledge and their information. And I know they've been highly influential on Tyson. And so a lot of the places that he's, a good chunk of where he's actually done his studying has been through the Photoshop world. It's been through Creative Live classes online.
And a lot of books.
And a lot of books. Yeah. So he's a go-getter and he's a thorough studier. And so I just, you know, there are options, excuse me, out there for, you know, folks if, you know, they're not going to go the typical university route. That is definitely an option for people. There's a lot of things out there to be looking at. And those are two great avenues. Okay, so we're going to wrap this up with one. Where can people find you?
People can find me all over the interweb. You can follow me on Twitter at Photosugi, S-U-G-I. My website is TysonSugihara.com. There should be a link there on my podcast, but it's S-U-G-I-H-A-R-A. Also on Facebook. And yeah, and that has, if you can find me one place, you can find me in all, because I believe they all link there. Instagram is TysonSugihara. That's that.
And sometimes on Periscope.
And sometimes on Periscope, yes. If you're on Periscope, you can see some actual live video. We have live video shoots. So we'll do of shoots in the studio or outside or different things photo related. We've been doing a lot of Periscope work as well. So we're out there. And if you definitely, I would like to work with people. I'm always, I like to pass on any knowledge that I have to other photographers. And that's one thing that I can't stress enough, and I was guilty of it for a long time, is when you learn something cool that you hold on to it and don't teach others. And that's the wrong way to go about doing anything. And we've learned from the greatest photographers of our time, the greatest entrepreneurs of our time, and speakers. The list goes on and on. The one thing that the best of everything have in common is that they teach others to do exactly what they do. And I want to make sure that I pay forward any knowledge that I have and that I'm not holding on to that, because that's what is going to separate the true professionals from the amateurs out there, is when we're able to teach others.
Cool. And I was actually just going to ask one lasting piece of advice for anybody that's thinking about being a photographer, but I think you just actually already did that. So
right. What I would say is find the person that you admire, that you would consider a mentor in your area, and latch onto them and work with them and offer to, you know, if it's sweeping the floors in the studio or gaffing the gear for them, being an assistant, a second shooter, whatever you need to do, but latch onto the best and do what you can to work with them in a non-greedy way, if that makes sense. So I'm not sure how to put that without sounding like a jerk.
Well, just be generous with the information. But
they'll be generous with you. If they're a true professional, they will be generous with you. If they're not, then you're hanging around the wrong people.
Yeah, and I think that's,
if you have any questions, you can email me as well.
Where do they email you?
Tyson@thinairmedia.com.
There we go. Well, congratulations, honey, on your first inaugural, I guess first and inaugural is a double word, but it's the same word, but your inaugural podcast.
My introductory first inaugural podcast.
There you go. First one ever. And I think that hopefully for everybody listening that they got a little bit of a behind the scenes of the studio life with Tyson Sugihara, and got a little bit of a flavor of what makes him tick and the life of a photographer. So we'll keep on doing it.
We will. Thanks so much for joining us, and we'll see you on our next episode in the studio.